Changes to come in U.S. education. The biggest infrastructure challenge for the United States in the next decade is not the billions needed for railroads, highways, and energy. It is the American school system. From kindergarten through the PhD program and the postgraduate education of adults. And it requires something far scarcer than money, thinking and risk-taking. The challenge is not one of expansion. On the contrary, the rapid growth in enrollment over the last 40 years has come to an end. By 1978, more than 93% of young people entering the labor force had at least an eighth grade education. So even if the birth rate should rise somewhat, little expansion is possible for elementary and secondary school enrollments. The last 30 years of social upheaval are also over. Busing will continue to be a highly emotional issue in a good many large cities. And there will still be efforts to use school to bring women into fields such as engineering that have traditionally been considered male. But this shift has already been accomplished in many fields. Half or more of the accounting students in graduate schools of business, for example, are now women. As for most other social issues, the country will no longer try to use schools to bring about social reform. It's becoming increasingly clear to policymakers that schools cannot solve all the problems of the larger community. Instead, the battle cry for the 90s will be the demand for performance and accountability. For 30 years, employers have been hiring graduates for their degrees rather than their abilities. Employment, pay, and often even promotion have depended on one's diploma. Now, many major employers are beginning to demand more than the completion of school. Some of the major banks, for example, are studying the possibility of entrance examinations that would test the knowledge and abilities of graduates applying for jobs. Students and parents, too, will demand greater accountability from schools on all levels. It would be increasingly common to go to law against school districts and colleges for awarding degrees without imparting the skills that are supposed to go along with them. And many young people are already switching to practical, hard subjects. Caring little about the so-called youth culture and the media, they have been shifting from psychology into medicine, from sociology into accounting, and from black studies into computer programming. Demand for education is actually going up, not down. What is going down, and fairly fast, is demand for traditional education in traditional schools. Indeed, the fastest growing industry in America today may be the continuing professional education of highly schooled adults. Much of it takes place outside the education establishment, through companies, hospitals, and government departments that run courses for managerial and professional employees, or through management associations and trade associations. In the meantime, any number of private enterprises are organizing courses, producing training films and tapes, and otherwise taking advantage of growth opportunities that universities shy away from. The demand for continuing education does not take the form that most observers, including this writer, originally expected. Namely, great books classes for adults wanting to learn about the humanities, the arts, the life of the mind. We face instead a growing demand for advanced professional education, in engineering and medicine, in accounting and journalism, in law and in administration and management. Yet the adults who come back for such studies also demand what teachers of professional subjects are so rarely able to supply, a humanistic perspective that can integrate advanced professional and technical knowledge into a broader universe of experience and learning. Since these new students also need unconventional hours, evenings, weekends, or high-intensity courses that stuff a term's work into 2 weeks, their demands for learning bring a vague but real threat to the school establishment. The greatest challenge to education is likely to come from our new opportunities for diversity. We now have the chance to apply the basic findings of psychological, developmental, and educational research over the last 100 years, namely, that no one educational method fits all children. Almost all children are capable of attaining the same standards within a reasonable period of time. All but a few babies, for instance, learn to walk by the age of 2, and to talk by the age of 3, but no two get there quite the same way. So too at higher levels. Some children learn best by rote, in structured environments with high certainty and strict discipline. Others gain success in the less structured, permissive atmosphere of a progressive school. Some adults learn out of books. Some learn by doing. Some learn best by listening. Some students need prescribed daily doses of information. Others need challenge and a high degree of responsibility for the design of their own work. But for too long, teachers have insisted that there is one best way to teach and learn, even though they have disagreed about what that way is. A century ago, the greatest majority of Americans lived in communities so small that only one one-room schoolhouse was within walking distance of small children. Then there had to be one right method for everybody to learn. Today, the great majority of peoples in the United States and all developed countries live in big cities with such density that there can easily be three or four elementary schools, as well as secondary schools, within each child's walking or bicycling distance. This enables students and their parents to choose between alternative routes to learning offered by competing schools. Indeed, competition and choice are already beginning to infiltrate the school system. Private schools and colleges have shown an unusual ability to survive and develop during a period of rising costs and dropping enrollments elsewhere. All this presents, of course, a true threat to the public school establishment. But economics, students' needs, and our new understanding of how people learn are bound to break the traditional education monopoly, just as trucks and airplanes broke the monopoly of the railroads, and computers and chips are breaking the telephone monopoly. In the next 10 or 15 years, we will almost certainly see strong pressures to make schools responsible for thinking through what kind of learning methods are appropriate for each child. We will almost certainly see great pressure from parents and students alike for result-focused education and for accountability in meeting objectives set for individual students. The continuing professional education of highly educated adults will become a third tier in addition to undergraduate and professional or graduate work. Above all, attention will shift back to schools and education as the central capital investment and infrastructure of a knowledge society.